Welcome to episode 394 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 3rd of September 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at 12 p.m. Melbourne time. Rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the Tech Webcast iPhone or iPad app. Support us at patreon.com/techwebcast. And just a note that our last episode of Tech Webcast broke the magic 500 downloads. So thank you very much. Our hosts today are Brad, Jacob, and myself, Daryl. And our special guest is Jamie Jones from Vinyl. No, JJS Vinyl. Welcome. It's got JJS Vinyl in the show notes. So I'm just an automaton. I just read when I'm read. But welcome, Jamie. Welcome from to the podcast.
Hello.
Welcome.
So and good afternoon, Brad.
Kerry from Kerry Co. Check out our latest game release, Alley Cat, on iOS and Android. And check out our website at kerryco.net. Now I hand you back to Brad and the team at Tech Webcast.
If you like new stuff before anybody else, if you like to keep your finger on the pulse, if you like the future and want to be in it, keep on listening because we'll start in a minute. Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Cause technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha! Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast. Ha! Ha! Tech Webcast. Let's go!
Good afternoon, Brad, and you're going to have to sack me from introductory duties after that fiasco. So the take three.
Good, all good. That's all about having fun on the podcast.
Exactly. So
having fun.
Exactly.
Guys, I love the theme song too. It had me dancing. So you know.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks, mate. Appreciate that, and welcome to the podcast, Jamie. By the way, welcome. Good to have you on, mate.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You're from JJ's Vinyl. It's an online record store where you sell vinyl records.
Correct. Yes. Initially, I started the business just through record fairs, and it's kind of grown. And here we are. I have the website now, and it's kind of expanding every week. But I guess the whole resurgence in vinyl has... It's just gone through the roof, and it's building momentum. It hasn't stopped, so you know I'm riding that wave at the moment.
Good on you, mate. Good on you, Daryl. How's your week been, mate? Good to have you on. And
thank you.
The intro part was very funny.
It wasn't one of my better intros, but I now understand what JJS when it was in the notes, and I read it phonetically, like you know, oh JJS Vinyl, and it was JJ's.
I think I may have wrote it wrong, maybe.
So that's okay, but we got there. And yeah, it's been a pretty good week. Just being a bit frustrated with our internet speed at work and video conferencing and stuff, but we're not a lot we can do until the NBN rolls out our way. So just shows how much we need high speed internet. Please give us some high speed internet, particularly upload speeds.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, and
definitely,
I'm just been waging war with Facebook over the fact that it still wants to believe I'm in Brisbane and not in Mansfield, Northeast Victoria. But great.
So what does it do that? What do you know? What does that? Or
it must be something. I think there actually is a Mansfield somewhere up in Queensland. But as you can see, I posted on Facebook the map, little map on that would says where are your friends sort of thing in Facebook on the mobile. It actually has the map to Mansfield where I am, but it then says Brisbane. So and for those living outside Australia, that's about 1,000 kilometres. Difference. So it's like saying, you live in New York, and it's like saying you're actually in Florida with Jacob Jones. So that's the sort of It's not like it's a mile or two different. So anyway, I'm not sure why they it is.
Are you any relation to Jacob Jones at all, Jamie? Just a joke. That's a side joke. By the way.
There's a possible chance. I can't say I know him, but I'm sure all our Joneses are related in some way or other.
Well, Jones was a good old-fashioned Welsh name going way, way, way back. So you might all have Welsh ancestry somewhere back in the day.
That's right. Not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing at all. I mean, seeing you talking about vinyl, some of the best singers are Welsh.
Yeah, so definitely. Yeah, definitely.
And what else we got from there? Stereophonics, I think, came from Wales, and Manic Street Preachers.
Cranberries?
Yeah. Don't know. I'm not 100% about them.
Okay.
Welsh choirs, Welsh rugby team, the Dragon, with the Welsh Dragon on their rugby team. So, yes.
Yeah. All right, Jacob, welcome to the podcast, mate. How's your week been?
Hell on earth.
Oh, yeah? What's been happening, mate?
Went through a hurricane, knocked out the power for 8 hours.
Yeah, that's not good.
Then knocked out the internet for 8 hours.
That's not good.
It came back up at 3 p.m. my time.
Good stuff, mate. Good to have you on board. Anything else you want to mention before we go into the interview with Jamie?
I mentioned
where we went just during the week. In Fitzroy, went to Dixon Recyclables.
Yes, we did.
You actually picked out 6 records.
Yep.
They're pretty damn awesome too, by the way, too. They're old, and we got a Devo Live.
Wow, very good. Good find.
Good find. Yeah, great find. Yeah.
Also, he put a post up there on Facebook.
Yep.
I said, Brad must be whipping it hard.
That's too funny.
Whipping it.
Do you know Devo, Daryl?
I remember them when it. I think I remember that song when it actually came out originally. That's how. Yeah, it's. I do. They wore those funny hats.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they wore the funny hats, Devo. I don't know whether I was actually a great fan of them, but yeah, I remember the hats. It was that an era of really strange clothing, to say the least. But then I grew up in, you know, the glam rock, so I mean, they say I can't talk about strange clothing. No. I mean, you know, Kiss wore a few strange outfits too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they set the scene, didn't they?
Oh, yes, and Gary Glitter. Well, we won't talk about him, but I mean, whoops, anymore, but yes.
All right. So welcome to the podcast, Jamie. Good to have you on, mate.
Thank you.
And tell us about what you do and your online store and stuff, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, I pretty much I attend a lot of the record fairs around Melbourne at the moment. So cool. Coming up over the next couple of months, I pretty have one happening every weekend. So I'm starting from the 11th, we've got the Q Record Fair, which is, that's pretty big, and it's growing. It's at a tennis club, bowls club, but just in the time that I've been attending that event, it's grown hugely, and the number of people that they're attracting there is, it's enormous. So, but yeah, the momentum, like I said earlier, just hasn't really stopped, and these fairs are popping up everywhere. So I'm basically, because I don't have a physical store, I attend as many of these record fairs as I can, and it sort of gets the name out there. And it's really good to have a physical presence as well, even if it's at the record fairs, because you get to talk with your customers. And that's the beauty of what I'm really doing, because I'm really passionate about vinyl and music in general. I love having a conversation with people about, their favourite record. I mean, because we all have so much of an emotional attachment to our favorite bands and favorite albums. And it's just, you know, the diversity in the crowd is incredible. You know, people you wouldn't probably have a conversation with. You know, you have a conversation with about their favorite record, and they're bringing up memories, you know, from when they were a teenager. And, you know, it sort of brings people together on that level. And so I think why I love music, but the vinyl craze, I mean, it's, I don't know. I wrote a bit of a blog on the website, and it's to do with audiophile vinyl, because a lot of people are very concerned with the corners that have been cut with record companies having to sort of keep up with the high demand for vinyl these days. So there's a lot of companies that are cutting corners by not following that true analog path. And there's a lot of steps along the way that they have to follow. And if some step along the way that they throw in a digital, you know, processor or whatever, and that they don't follow it correctly, then that's no longer true analog. So people are finding this out more and more. And, of course, a lot of the record companies and artists, they're not making the consumers aware. So you really have to do your research when you're buying these records. It's a bit of a concern, but it's just something you kind of have to look out for, because you know, everyone just assumes, you know, I play a record and it's going to be an analog sound, but not always. It might have come from a digital source. So
really,
absolutely. So I wrote a blog on the website at JJ's Vinyl. So check that out. But it's really a matter of doing your homework and talking to, the experts. Try and talk to the, you know, the people that are selling you the records and find out more about the release. You know, obviously the true audiophile records are going to be slightly more expensive, but, you know, sometimes it's worth the while just paying a little bit more, knowing, you know, you're going to get peace of mind and a good quality, you know, the vinyl that you can treasure.
Yeah, right. So how do you know, how can you tell if it is a digital copy or something?
It's very hard to tell. As I mentioned, a lot of the artists and record companies, they're not passing that information on. So there are certain ways you can do it, and I find there are certain forums that you can go onto, you know, for if you're an audiophile, you just Google that. There's a number of them, and Google that release, and let's say, for example, you know, David Bowie's got a box set coming out in a few weeks' time. You could pretty much go onto any audiophile site and just Google David Bowie's new album, and there'll already be conversation about, you know, I guess how they've processed or recorded, I guess, David Bowie's music onto the vinyl. So if there's any hints of any digital technology being used, then, you know, there'll be a long line of quite sort of angry people, you know, getting upset by it. So that's the first way I could, you know, you could definitely find out. But it's very difficult, even as someone who sells the vinyl, even like the wholesalers I would buy my vinyl through, they don't necessarily listen to me that, you know, what I'm purchasing is not an audiophile record. So it is really a matter of doing your homework, because it is near impossible. But some artists have very good track records with when it comes to, you know, the true analog recordings. And it's a matter of really just looking at the track record of those bands and going, okay, they've used this label to record their next album. They're a band that truly believe in the full analog sound. Chances are that album, you know, an educated educated guess that will be an audiophile album. But I think the problem is, you have there's such a high demand for all the classic records, and for a classic record, it might be, say, a Pink Floyd album. So it could be the Beatles, it could be the Stones. But to truly, follow the analog path, they would have to go back to the original master tapes. And this involves a long line of people from all the way, through the original sound engineers, all the way to the people that will be pressing the album. It's a very expensive process. So unless the record companies are willing to invest that money, then there are corners being cut. So
yeah, right.
It's buyer beware. It's really,
yeah, definitely.
Do your homework. And in a lot of these record fairs, I have I have people that will only buy the new vinyl, and there are people that go around the record fair and they'll only buy the second hand vinyl, which is, they'll be, is that a first pressing? And if it's a new band, they've only been around for a few years, the chances are that I'll be selling that first pressing. But in terms of bands from the 60s or 70s, well, there's no way I'll be selling first pressings of any of that stuff, because that's just not around anymore. You can get the stuff at these record fairs, but you'll be paying an arm and a leg for it. So
yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Jacob, you got a question for Jamie?
Yes. What was the first ever vinyl that you ever found and got?
First ever vinyl. Well, that would be going back to when I was about 14, and there were two albums I bought around the same time. One was a Prince album, and I think it was 1999, and I was always a big fan of Prince, particularly around the time of when he did Purple Rain. So when I saw that album, 1999, it had Little Red Corvette and a few other of his hits. I was like, I had to have that. So there was that album. And I brought a Clash album around the same time as well. So, but my older brother always had quite a large record collection, and I'd always, go into his room when he was out and just sort of, borrow a few of his titles. And he, talking about Devo, he had quite a large Devo collection. So I was always listening to a bit of that, and the artists at the time around the 80s, like Talking Heads, I was, a big fan of theirs. Other bands that were starting to, become popular, U2. So I have quite, Pink Floyd, I have quite a diverse musical taste. But I really appreciate any music that basically, is on vinyl. If it sounds good, then I'll listen to it. I think that's kind of the beauty of vinyl, of sort of rediscovering a lot of these albums that during the time of the compact disc and MP3, I guess for a little while I became part of that, because I was just flicking through all the hits and the well-known stuff. But the fact that they're putting out all these classics again on vinyl, it sort of, it sort of snaps you out of it and puts those albums back to the fore and makes you more aware of just how truly amazing these classics are, and listening to them from start to finish, not skipping tracks. I mean, that's essential, because these artists, they put tracks in a particular order for a reason,
Definitely.
Spent a lot of time doing that, and it sort of brings you back to having to, it's a little bit more manual, and but it's enjoyable too,
It is indeed.
Pulling an album out of a out of its cover, and you know, it's just beautiful piece of art to look at, and then putting that on the record player and watching it spin, you know, when you know the first notes sort of start up, it's it is truly a beautiful thing, and I think a lot of people are discovering that, and you know, it's bringing it, the benefit of it, I think, is it's bringing the passion for music back, and I think, you know, that in itself is brilliant. You know,
I got the Silverchair Frog Stomp on vinyl a few weeks back, and I got the I think it's the gold color one vinyl, and it's got the frog on, and that looks fantastic.
Yeah, they're doing some beautiful pressings nowadays. You know, with the splatter discs and you know, they're trying to, I think, market it. You know, give people another reason to buy it. They might have already bought that on compact disc or on record vinyl when it originally came out, and through putting it out in this you know, coloured format, it gives you another reason to purchase that. But very collectible, and you know, I have heard a few bad copies of coloured vinyl, but as a rule, you know, they're pretty good and very collectible. So yeah.
Okay, awesome. Jacob, you got one more question, Matt? Go ahead.
Well, what type of record player do you use to play your records and stuff like that?
And speakers. What sort of speakers do you have?
Okay. Well, I have a Rig RP6, which is I've owned for probably about 3 years now. I have the amplifier that I'm running it through is a Cambridge. Not sure if you're familiar with that. It's an English brand. But it's a very solid, puts out a beautiful beautiful sound. The speakers that I'm running running attached to them are Bose.
Awesome.
I've had the standalone speakers. I've had them for probably 20 odd years, and they've been fantastic. I think they're 601s, I think that's the model. But they've been great. I have heard a lot of people bagging them because they're sort of the paper cones. But, you know, I think the sound's fantastic, and sort of paired up with the Riga, it's beautiful. You know, and that's why I sort of, I guess when I've got a couple of turntables, but the Riga is one that I'll play my pristine vinyl. So I won't put any of the second-hand stuff with scratches on, because, you know, the stylist is worth about $500 alone. So, I mean, you know, I've learned the hard way, you know. You must have
invested in a lot of money into your vinyl collecting and record play, you know, that sort of stuff, and, you know, hardware-wise.
Yeah. Look, it's an expensive hobby, but it doesn't have to be. You know, you can still buy budget turntables.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I guess I have a real passion for it. So, you know, I collect, I collect as well as, you know, sell vinyl. So, and I think, you know, people that have come to know me through the business, you know, I think they actually enjoy that, because I'm not just selling them something that to make a buck. I'm selling something because I'm passionate about it, and I can talk.
Definitely, I've bought from you. I've bought some stuff from you. It's been fantastic. You know, the service is just amazing. You know, it's great service, and you know, you're from Melbourne, and you know, it's good to support local businesses. You know that, you know.
Absolutely, and look, you know, there are a number of retailers overseas, which, you know, Amazon, to name one, you know, that you could go to and you could buy stuff. I've had a lot of issues with stuff through the mail from different, you know, companies, and I've sort of learned the hard way. It's a lot of the time, you know, they might deliver really cheaply and quickly, but sometimes the love just isn't there, you know, particularly when it comes to the packaging.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to weigh it up and go, do I want my vinyl to arrive in pristine condition and would I be willing compared with Amazon, I'm not even on the scale as them. So they can offer stuff that, you know, in most cases it probably will be cheaper, but the packaging really lets them down. And
yeah, I bought a record from them a while back, and the packaging wasn't that good, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You can,
if you're a real collector, you don't want your vinyl to arrive with any bent corners. You don't, because the vinyl moves around with inside the cardboard sleeve, sometimes it can move and actually cut through the sleeve. And the number of records that I've received in that condition in the past has been, you know, it's huge. And it's really, if you've been waiting, you know, a few weeks for an album to come in the mail and it arrives in that state, it's heartbreaking almost, you know, particularly if it's a limited edition item and you just think, you know, if a bit more care was taken with the packaging side of it, you wouldn't mind paying a little bit more, but, you know, you just have to weigh it up and go, well,
definitely.
If you don't mind your items arriving damaged, then, you know, sure, you know, use that service. But I think when I was setting the business up, that was one of my, philosophies, was about delivering to my customers their prized vinyl in perfect condition, you know. And if they can't get that, then, you know, if I wouldn't accept it, then I certainly don't expect my customers to accept it. So, yeah.
Darryl, any questions for Jamie?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was listening to, I was thinking back to my days with vinyl back pre-CD, and we'd go into a record shop and you'd see the, you know, racks of vinyl, and the first thing when you thought of you thought, there's a record I like, was you pulled it out of the sleeve and you actually put it up to the light and looked at a glance to see if there are any scratches on it, or it looked like if there'd been any sort of, you know, damage done to it, because it was very hard in those days if you went and just bought it and then you took it home and you played it and you found out a big scratch. If you took it back to the record shop, they say, oh, well, you did that. You know, you scratched it on the vinyl, you know, when you were playing it. It was very hard to prove. So we tended to sort of pull them out of the sleeve and put them up a bit to the light and look at least, you know, to see particularly scratches. And if you're right, if there's anything on the edges that looked like it had been, you know, bumped or in transit anywhere. So it was one of those things that sort of became a bit of a lost art, I guess, when CDs came out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, doing a lot of these record fairs, you know, a lot of the other vendors that I'm working next to, you know, that they're in the secondhand sort of used vinyl market, and you know, a lot of the customers that are coming through, they're doing exactly that. They're pulling it, lifting the album up, and they're holding it up to the light, you know. Checking all the corners and then pulling the record out. And you know, sometimes if you can tell someone that really wants an album, you know, they're sort of their eyes will light up and they'll they want that album. And sometimes people will bargain, you know, if there's a slight mark on the actual vinyl or on the sleeve. But, you know, that still happens. You still see that. But with... In the new vinyl sort of market, everything's sealed in plastic, and you really just have to trust the vendor that you're buying from. And I think, you know, that's one area I really want my customers to feel safe in, the knowledge that, well, I'm not going to sell them something that's, has been mishandled. And when they open that plastic sleeve, they're going to find a pristine vinyl inside. You know, that's not to say that sometimes there are record companies that, aren't necessarily following the correct procedures with their manufacturing. And sometimes you can open an album up that's brand new in the plastic and it will have fingerprints all over it. You think, how is that possible? I've actually had a couple of albums just within the time I've been dealing with vinyl. Customers have come back to me and they said, look, this has got fingerprints on it. But you sold it to me sealed. How did that happen? And I try to explain to them, you know, that the only way that could possibly happen would be at the record plant, you know, it's when they're packaging the album. And sometimes those fingerprints might come off. They shouldn't be there because really, you know, when they're packaging these albums, fingers aren't supposed to go near the vinyl. But, you know, like I said earlier, there are corns being cut. And, they're just some of the things that are happening.
But that would be that was sort of what I was going to lead on to, because I was interested because of, you know, the old vinyl, if you like, the original recordings that are still floating around out there, and what they call now the new vinyl and you're saying that some of the new vinyl has digital elements within it. It's not pure like analog, but the issue is, how do you get around that in the sense that, as you said earlier, the cost. And I can remember why, you know, in back in the day, it was so difficult, almost impossible for independent musos to ever get record stuff, because it all had to go to a huge studio, which had, you know, analog mixes, the whole thing. You had to have recording time. Then, of course, you had the press, and, of course, they had to press so many thousands of copies to make it viable. And it wasn't really till CDs and it came out that meant the process of producing music became so much cheaper that independent musos could say, oh, hey, I don't need a record label. I can produce my own.
Yes, that's a good question. Look, there's in terms of what has happened, I think, the industry, the record, the vinyl industry has sort of remained dormant for many, many years. And because of that, there were a lot of the vinyl manufacturing companies that went out of business or they basically would, that shut the doors of the factory and all their presses are there gathering dust. And it's a lot of those have been, resurrected, so to speak. And I think this is all sort of part of the problem with the quality control, you know, in terms of, well, you have it's obviously a very expensive process to follow to the analog path. I think for new artists putting out albums, I don't think it's as pricey as it is grabbing, say, an album from the 60s and then having to go back to those original master tapes. Now that process is very expensive. When a record company decides to do that, they really have to, do their sums and make sure that they're going to sell enough of that particular title to kind of justify it. But obviously at the end of the day, the price point for that album is going to be a lot higher. The purists out there, they won't sort of falter with having to pay for that. But, someone who doesn't have a very good setup, they might just, want like an older secondhand copy, might have a few scratches. They may be happy with that. But, it's kind of, I don't know. I think if the trend continues like it is, we'll see a lot more holes where it'll become more apparent. I think the companies that are cutting the corners, they'll start to become much more clearer. But there are companies out there that they specialize in this in audiophile vinyl. And, I don't know if the price will ever drop for these titles. And the ones I'm talking about, like there's Analog Productions in the States, and they do an amazing job. They follow the process, you know, right from the beginning with the original analog tapes, you know, to the all the way through. They monitor it, but then they have engineers and producers and everything involved. It's just simply not a. I don't think it's ever going to be an affordable process. It's just one that, you know, if there's a demand for it, they'll keep it up. But I don't think it will ever ever become like a budget item, I guess, you know.
Well, I think it'd have to be the you'd have to get the volume of sales back up to almost, you know, pre CD days when there was no other option bar vinyl. For the lower the price. If it's if vinyl remains a niche market these days of enthusiasts and a few others, then I don't think you're then those original type recordings. I don't think you're ever going to get them down to a low price.
Yes, yeah, I think you summed it up. I'd absolutely agree. Because it is just so labor intensive. Mm. So you know.
Yeah.
Looking at it from their perspective, you know, they're doing an amazing job, but yeah, no, they have to, at the end of the day, they have to cover their costs. So I can't see it ever changing. You're right. Unless the volume's there.
So, Jamie, what's the future for your online store, mate? Are you gonna eventually open up a shop in Melbourne somewhere, or are you going to keep on selling online?
I'd like to eventually open up a shop, but. For the moment, I'm just because really the online store hasn't been going that long now. So,
how long has it been around for? How long has it been around for?
When was it? About April, start of this year. In April this year. So,
okay. So still new.
Pretty new. But I've been doing the record fairs around Melbourne for at least 2.5 odd years. So, nice. And you know, the way I started that, it wasn't really to I've got the story on my website, it wasn't really to make a buck out of it. It was just like culling some of my collection, and I had a lot of double ups, and I really was making room for more records. But you know, kind of the interest grew, and I had a lot of people that were, you know, quite impressed by my collection and what I was selling, and they you know, I was being asked, like, you know, every second customer, have you got an online store, or do you have a physical shop? And I think I heard that enough, and it was like, okay, it's probably it's probably just cause now to you know, expand. So that's what I've done. So in terms of opening up that physical location, if the right opportunity sort of, you know, jumps out at me, and I might. But the thing is, I also managed to keep my price point down as well through not having huge overheads. And, to open up a physical location for me, it might mean that the final price point suffers. So, this is... one of the things that I have a lot of my customers are very happy with, because you know I sell my records at good prices. I hunt around, I source vinyl from all around the world, and I find the best prices and the best quality, and I pass that on. I don't look, okay, I got that really cheaply, I'm gonna sell it for whatever JB Hi-Fi or some other shop is selling it. I'll sell it at my margins, and I'll turn them over, and so that's my business model, I guess. And I have a lot of repeat customers that know that they're getting a good deal from me, and they keep coming back, and that's kind of what I want to aim for. You know, I want people to get a good product at a good price.
Do you think that with whether it's the new digital or not new digital, the new vinyl or the old vinyl, do you think that eventually even the new vinyl will sort of like become collector's items, because there won't be the volume produced that, say, you know, you get on digital music. So in years to come, those records that will become collector's items, because there just won't be that many of them pressed.
Absolutely. Look, that's already happening now. There are certain bands that will, they'll do limited runs on vinyl, and it might, let's say, take the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I can't think of the name of their latest album off the top of my head, but they released a limited 180 gram press, and they might have even done a coloured version, but that sold out, I think, even before... it became available, so they had a pre-sale on it. It sold out. It's gone. That's a collector's item now, and the price of those particular vinyl has more than tripled. You just have to go on places like eBay or Discogs, and you can sort of follow the trend. There's certain bands that are very clever in the way they market themselves, and they'll put out a limited release. This is the other thing that's happening is they might put out a special coloured release to start, and it's only, might only be 1,000 or 1,500 copies of that album, and they're selling out so quickly, and people are snapping them up. They sort of become very aware of what's going on, and it's even for someone like myself who's selling vinyl, I sometimes struggle to get my allocation because the demand is so high for these, for particular bands. We're talking, the latest indie alt bands that are releasing albums, and they're being snapped up. So yeah, they've become the modern classics already. Certainly if you look at some of the prices these items are fetching. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like even within like a 6 month period of an album release, and I saw that trend a number of years ago, and I couldn't quite believe it. It's not just confined to your classics from the 60s or 70s. It's happening with all the modern classics. So yeah, you have to be pretty quick nowadays.
definitely. What's the best seller you've sold a lot of, Jamie, so far? What's the best seller you sold? A lot of you start.
Okay. On the site, I'd sell probably a lot of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I sell quite a lot of Metallica at record fairs. Metallica, I think, as a band would probably be my number one. Other albums that I sell a lot of, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Cool. I'd probably at a record fair, I think if I had, at least half a dozen copies, I sell out of them at a record fair. It's just one of those classic albums, and people are coming back for it, and there have been so many different vinyl pressings of that. I've put one up on my website. It's a blue vinyl, and it has a die cut sleeve, so you can see the blue vinyl. Not to say that that's an audiophile copy. I do sell audiophile copies as well, but this is the thing that's happening. There's the albums that are Kind of Blue during the sort of the the compact disc phase, the MP3 phase. I don't know how well it was sort of doing in the charts, but now that albums have made a comeback, stuff like this is huge. So just trying to think other bands that
do you get much of a distinction too between in back in my day we used to look at albums, and we look at whether the album was a studio produced album, whether the band sat in the studio, or whether it was a live album, that was actually recorded live in concert. Because some bands, if you look at, going way back, if you look at a band like Deep Purple, for example, to my opinion, their live recordings, with any even with imperfections in it, was just so much better in some cases musically than when they sat in a studio and it was done, just on the studio with the guys sitting at big mixing desks.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And I think a lot of it varies on how that band sort of valued that live recorded sound. I guess sometimes the bands don't necessarily have good producers surrounding them that'll record, you know, good sound engineers that'll be capturing the magic. There are some stunning live albums, but the live albums, from my perspective, they're big sellers for the fans, it tends to be. They're not necessarily, bought by, I guess if someone came to me and they hadn't heard much, say, Deep Purple, they would probably look at the classic titles and not so much the live stuff. So what we kind of have happening is people that are coming to me, they're all a huge demographic, but people that might have, just bought themselves a turntable and might be a fan of Deep Purple. They might not be. One of their friends might have told them to buy a Deep Purple album or whatever. They'll start with the classics, you know. You'll have the more of the hardcore fan will purchase the live recordings. But, yeah, when it comes to... certainly when it comes to selling live albums, I don't tend to sell a lot of them. Fleetwood Mac, they'd released a live 3-LP set. It was on 180 gram, and it was recorded just after their Tusk album was released. Yeah. And that's a beautiful recording. I think they had Richard Dassett, one of the main... producers who was in studio around the time of Rumours and Tusk. So it's an amazing sound, and it captures a lot of the live sort of antics that happened between the band. And they're good albums, but they don't, and I personally as a fan, I thought, well, you know, they'll be quite popular, but they're not big sellers. They will sell to the fans, but they don't, regardless of the sound, it tends just to be a smaller market with the fans buying those albums.
It's interesting because we used to have, you know, that was the debate that we'd have amongst the guys that I grew up with, you know, when we'd be looking at records and we'd be saying, oh, yeah, there's the live version, and then there was the studio version. And we'd often argue about, you know, when we were sitting around, which was the better version. Sometimes it might be one particular song on an album was so much better on a live recording for whatever reason that, say, it was on the studio or vice versa. It was just one of those debating points.
Yeah, look, it's that's the kind of the beauty of listening to vinyl. It's so subjective, you know, and you could have debates with people for ages on certain albums and favorites, and nowadays I just go with what people say, because, you know, it all depends on the individual, and everyone has personal tastes, and they might have different memories associated with certain songs. So, yeah, it is good to share those stories and find out why it's
ironic, because in the old days, it used to be, listening to music used to be more a collective thing. You know, you had your stereo system at home, or you went round to a mate's place and you took your records around. I've said it to Brad before, you know, and we'd all sit around together and you'd play an album and you'd discuss it and argue about it and whether it was good, bad, or what was good. Then CDs and stuff and portable music came out, and people tended to listen to music more in isolation because they could. They could put it on an iPod and go running and things like that. Now with sort of the streaming music, like your Spotify's, it's almost gone in a way full circle, because people can now share their music with other people who use Spotify and they can discuss it again. So it's almost like we've gone, and now with vinyl making a resurgence, it's like we've gone back to music being a collective interest rather than it just being you sitting at home with your headset on listening to it.
What do you think that, Daryl, that the vinyl is coming back? What do you think? Why is it coming back?
Personally, I think it may have started off as a bit of a, like, oh, for a generation that grew up without vinyl. They only heard about it from their parents or something. I think it was a bit of an interest too. I think there's probably always been an underground vinyl community that continued on after CDs came out and digital music came out and loved it and just sort of said, I'm not going to change for anybody because I love my vinyl music. And I think, yeah, and a few people have sort of played it and said, I like this. And I think things like the cover art.
Yeah, exactly.
And pulling it out of the sleeve. And I still believe, I think, sitting down maybe on a record player, putting it on with other people around you, listening to it, thrashing out about it. Was that a good album? Was that a good version? I think because music, you know, is great, I think, when it's shared. And I think when you share it by people sitting around listening to it together, having like our guests today, I mean, how often do you have people discussing CDs and digital music?
Exactly.
I mean, vinyl's given people now a discussion point to get them back into listening to music. That's sort of the things that, you know, as someone who came from the vinyl era, it's sort of interesting. But I think it's brought people back to actually talking about it. I'll have to pull them out again. I have got some stored away. I mean, that'd be a question. The interesting thing is now, with people that live in smaller apartments and things these days, I mean, vinyl, if you get right into it, it takes up a lot of room to store.
It does. Yeah, it does.
I mean, you've got to build record shelves. In the old days of people having, you know, a room and they'd build shelves to put their records in, and then you walk in like a library and, you know, you'd walk in and say, oh, that's, you've got that album. Oh, you've got, some people let you flip through their albums and you say, oh, you've got that one. And again, it became a sort of a talking point. Almost like an icebreaker with people. Oh, what album did you get this week, or what album have you gotten? And you look, but yeah, you need now records. So maybe there'll be another industry in rebuilding, you know, record shelves.
All right, we need to wrap up the podcast, Jamie. So good to have you on, mate.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jamie. That's great.
Where can they get hold of you if they want to ask you any more questions, mate?
They can contact me through the website. Email me at jamie@jjsvinyl.com. So, but if you go through the website, just click on contact and, yeah, send me a message. Yeah.
All right. Appreciate your time, mate. Good to have you on.
Thank you very much.
And also, do you ship well around the world as well, or just within Australia?
Yeah, just within Australia at the moment.
Okay. All right, cool. Daryl Hunt, what's your final view of the show, mate?
Great. It's really interesting, you know, vinyl. It's great to see that there's another alternative and that there's a growing community out there. Enjoyed the podcast. They can contact me on Twitter at Learnscape and on Google Plus at +Daryl Hunt. I'm still there.
You're still there, mate. I'm good on you. Get me on Twitter at Brad Ozzen at Tech Webcast. Jacob Jones, what about you, mate? Any last questions or views or opinions or whatever?
Nope, but you can follow me at jazzbot326691z.
Good stuff. And also, Jamie, the Pink Floyd what's that album called? Jacob was after that one. When I got that, what was that?
Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, that album, Jamie. That's very hard to get, isn't it? Now,
yeah. Look, there's still you know, repressed copies going around, but Pink Floyd are doing a reissue campaign, which they've done the first three albums. They've got another three coming out in about a week's time. The entire catalog, so you'll be able to get that one relatively easy. So just patient. Be patient. You'll find that probably by the end of the year they'll release that.
That's one group you want to listen from go to woe and not cherry pick the songs, because they wrote them particularly to be played straight through.
Definitely. Can't skip. Yeah, that's one album. That's great. What else, Jacob? Anything else you want to mention, mate, before we go?
Nope.
That's it. Daryl, what about you? Next week, iPhone event on Wednesday.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what Apple are going to bring out, whether an iPhone 7 and what iPhone 7s will be. There's all, as typical with Apple, there's tons of rumors flying around. There was going to be like an iPhone 7 Pro, and then others are writing, no, that's been pulled. We'll just have to all wait with bated breath to see what happens.
So next week will be a dedicated episode to that event. So an Apple event, round up and look back and what happened and stuff. And
excellent.
We may even get a few extra people on to talk about that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Be fantastic. All right, thanks, Jamie, for being on. Appreciate your time, mate.
Thanks, Jamie.
No problem. Thank you. Okay, bye, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Jack. You lost the game, by the way.
You did too.
Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Because technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha, stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech, 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 tech webcast. Ha, ha. Tech, 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 tech webcast. Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer. Boom!